The following is a North Carolina Baptist resource. For more, visit ncbaptist.org.
Thank you for coming to this presentation on a collaborative view of church life, of having multiple congregations within the same church. So with that, we're going to go ahead and get started. This picture, just so you know, is a picture of our multiple congregations at the time gathered together on Pentecost Sunday, 2016, one of our Mosaic worship services. And I'll speak more about those later on in my talk. But as we begin, this is why we're here today, to talk about partnership being the name of the game in today's ministry landscape, both due to the greater collaborative nature of gospel work, as well as realizing that maybe one church being responsible for the upkeep and maintenance of their own facility may be a lot to ask of a lot of congregations. So partnership is definitely the name of the game, and how we can expand our gospel witness by inviting in and having multiple congregations using and ministering out of the same campus. So hopefully by the end of the day, you'll see how we've tried to navigate those channels and how your church, wherever that may be, can possibly entertain and bring on some of these partnerships as well. As we go through, if you have any questions, feel free to stop me anywhere along the way. I'm happy to jump in at any moment. So with that, a little bit about who we are as Forest Hills Baptist Church. We are located in Raleigh, real close to NC State and Meredith College in West Raleigh. If you've ever been around there, we are sandwiched between Wade Avenue and Hillsborough Street. We can be on State's campus by walking in about 4 minutes. Meredith is about 5 to 10, so very close to some of those universities in Raleigh. We are founded in 1945 by a missionary who had come off the field. He had been in Southeast Asia, and due to the war at the time, he had been recalled back to the States, found his way to the Raleigh area, and the association had charged him with planting a new church for what was then a growing area in West Raleigh. It still had a lot of farmland, trees, no development. That's not the case nowadays. But even since with his work getting the church up and going, really instilled a missionary's heart for church life. And over time, that developed by bringing in, you know, a lot of other former missionaries who'd come off the field just to be a part of our church, who were working in denominational levels across the state. So a lot of missionaries finding themselves to the church, a lot of folks who lived and worked out of the campus environments, really helped us to see that, you know, in a lot of ways, the world has come to us, and thus ignited a very strong passion for our local international community that still exists to this day. And as an outcropping of that, we have helped to found and establish ties with multiple ethnic and language churches throughout the years. I'll show you a quick list of the ones that currently meet at Forest Hills and a little bit of background about them. But there have been others who have come along, probably another 5 or 6 who have been started or fizzled out or moved on in different capacities. So when I refer to Forest Hills, I'm referring to our Anglo congregation, and we were founded in 1945. Along the way, the United African Baptist Church, which ministers to the French Congolese population of Raleigh and the Greater the Triangle area, they were established in the mid-1980s. Our Chinese Baptist Church, they minister now to mainland Chinese, visiting scholars through NC State. You know, the Triangle area, we were in a meeting earlier today about the growth of the Asian population. So they are doing a great job of reaching people. We had actually helped found a separate Chinese Baptist Church, which is now its own entity in North Raleigh in the early 80s. And then they went on to do their thing, but they focused on Taiwanese especially. And so this was purposefully started by a cluster of folks in that church to reach the mainland population. Our Iranian Christian Fellowship, the Farsi speakers, was established around the year 2000. That has been a ministry which has been crucial, but faces a lot of challenges because of the people group they're trying to reach. It's just remarkable what our minister to that people group is able to accomplish. And then different from the rest of these that I've already mentioned, Iglesia Bautista La Roca, Church of the Rock, They were already in existence before they came to our campus. They had been around for about 8 years at a church in Garner and had encountered what seemed to me to be less than hospitable of a relationship with that church and really felt that they couldn't minister in their full capacity. And so we did the work of entering into a very particular relationship with them. And so now when you look at Forest Hills on any given Sunday, we have all of these congregations represented and active in their own particular worship and ministry lives. So one of the questions we get asked sometimes is, why do we maintain and look for these types of partnerships? Of all the churches you could partner with, of all the congregations, why do you settle on these? First off, these partner churches can reach people groups that our church never could due to language, cultural, and racial barriers. We're an Anglo church. We probably do better than most in that we do have a good number of folks who come through our international ministry that's separate from these churches who may stick around for worship on Sunday mornings after their ESL lessons, and then others who have joined our Anglo congregation. But even then, we're still probably 90 to 95% an Anglo congregation. So we can only take so much pride in that sort of assessment. But even so, we recognize that because of the way we look, our cultural background, the languages we use, that we are not equipped at present to engage the type of cultures and people groups that are present in our area. So we really do see our language churches as being a very key asset in terms of reaching the people that God has brought to our area. Another thing is this. Our partner churches minister to people groups that are either unreached or underserved in our immediate area. Because we minister in and around the Research Triangle Park, we have a dearth of international communities represented throughout the area. And a lot of them are already reached through different types of churches, ministries, and that kind of thing. So either at the time they were founded or the time they came to us for partnership, they were ministering to and meeting a need among unreached and underserved folks in our immediate area, especially in West Raleigh. Our immediate area is overwhelmingly white when it comes to permanent residents, but we have a number of apartmental communities and communities tied to the university that bring in a lot of diversity throughout the year. And even though that's not a lot, they are there. They are our charge as God has called us to reach our immediate area. And then the last thing here is very, very important. The churches that we purposefully partner with are built around people, not a person. Now, here's what I mean by that. A lot of church plants, a lot of ethnic churches, language churches, they can easily be built around a personality, the pastor, that one driving lightning rod person. And that's great. You need someone to light a fire into people and to get folks out there and trained for ministry. But what we found is that trying to partner with a church that's based around a personality is not healthy. We as Baptists believe in congregational polity. We believe in democracy, and so we want to make sure that the churches that we're partnering with are built around people, lay leaders, a whole team of individuals who can sustain and carry on the ministry should a personality-type pastor leave from there. And so if you look at our churches today, they have very fleshed-out leadership teams, committees, that kind of thing. So it is a well-equipped and well-infrastructured network of churches that we serve with. Go ahead.
When you're talking about that, do you before you bring these churches in, do you vet them and make sure they're like-minded as far as the church government?
Yes, yes. I'd say with La Roca, because I spearheaded that work a few years ago, we talked to denominational leaders, we talked with folks from within their congregation, not just the pastor, and got to see their breakdown of church governance. The fact that they're in the Baptist stream already tells us that they share a lot of like-minded beliefs and structures of that way. So yeah, we did do our homework in terms of making sure that who they are matches up with who we are. With any church, there are going to be fluctuations and differences in terms of, you know, practicing theology, governance, that kind of thing. And you just got to figure out what you can live by and what you can't live by. Not only for you as leaders and members of your churches, but the membership as a whole. Because what we've encountered at times is, you know, perhaps our church leaders and ministers are more willing than large segments of the congregation as a whole. And that's just because we see things from a different vantage point as a lot of the folks who show up just on Sundays and sit in the pews. Good question. Does that answer it for you?
Yeah.
Okay. So we get this question a lot too. What do Sundays look like at Forest Hills? Complicated. This is not an easy arrangement. And, you know, this is maximum coverage that we could ever attempt to have in terms of partner churches. And if you were ever thinking about partnering with churches, I would never recommend you do this many. I would never, ever, ever recommend you do this many. But on Sunday mornings, we have, for our Anglo congregation, Forest Hills, we have both traditional and contemporary worship services that meet at the same time at 11 o'clock. One is in our sanctuary, that's traditional, and one is in the fellowship hall, that is contemporary. At the same time, in our chapel, the Chinese Baptist Church worships. We meet at 12 o'clock, that's where musical chairs start to take place, because the Chinese Baptist Church then has to go through their choir practice for next week, so that by the time they're done, the United African Church can come in around 3 o'clock and get started with their worship service. And keep in mind, with a lot of ethnic churches, time is a relative thing, not a fixed thing. And so as you're entertaining relationships or partnerships, just know that your perception of time is vastly different in a lot of ways than those people groups that you're going to be reaching through these partnerships. Now, when we get done with contemporary worship with the Anglo folks at, you know, 12 o'clock, we have to turn everything around so that La Roca can be in there by about 12:30 or 12:45 for their sound checks. And then mercifully, the Farsi Fellowship, the Iranian Christian Fellowship, they meet in one of our outside buildings, the Annex. And so they aren't having to, we're not having to play musical chairs so much with them, but the Chinese do use that space for a luncheon after worship, but there's enough downtime. So as complicated as Sunday is, trying to fit in all the other opportunities that these various churches have during the week for fellowship, ministry opportunities, Wednesday night, Saturday morning, it's trying to juggle a lot of things at once, and it's not always easy.
Do you have a staff member on campus during all that?
We do not. Not currently. Sometimes we have one of our security folks there for special events that are outside the norm of our usual operating calendar. But no, one of our folks isn't always there when these churches are meeting. There are times we wish that they were, but so how do we partner together throughout the year? This is a time, I'm sure, that we can come together for a lot of pie in the sky, hopeful conversations about what these partnerships can look like. And I'm not saying that the way we do them now is great or the best, because these things take constant revisioning efforts throughout the years to really keep these relationships meaningful and life-giving, not only to you, the host congregation, but for your partner congregations too. So just to tell you up front, most of the time, each congregation does their own thing. And there's both a purpose and a practical side because of that. Purpose is God has given each of our congregations a very specific mission and a very specific way of going about accomplishing that mission, both in terms of the primary language they use in their ministries, in their worship services, the type of cultural approaches they use, and then especially the type of people that they're called to reach. And so we found that by trying to do more and more together, because we think that's a good idea, we're taking each individual congregation away from their particular calling. Not to say that things together aren't good when done purposefully, but trying to be together just for the sake of being together can oftentimes remove people from the calling that God has placed on their congregation. At the same time, the language barriers, the times that people meet, the days of the week that work best, there are just a lot of conflicts and scheduling issues in trying to bring people together, especially when you look at the people groups that are part of these congregations. I go back to the African church meeting at 3 o'clock. That is a low-income congregation. So they work Saturday nights and Sunday mornings, and when they get off, they come here for worship. So trying to do things with a lot of them on Sunday mornings is impractical. The Iranian Christian Fellowship, when we have combined worship services, only a few of them come to join us because some of the folks who come here, they're fearful of others knowing that they are going to a Christian church for the purpose of Christian worship. The networks, the world's getting smaller, right? So it's easy for someone in the Iranian community of Raleigh to know that so-and-so went to a church, and that word can get back home to where their family is, and persecution can occur. There's a lot of fear in that, too. So there are a lot of reasons why we bless each congregation to do their own thing on their own timeline in their own way. So another way we partner together now, times for purposeful and combined worship services, outreach, fellowship, etc. We probably do more combined worship than any of these other things at present. For years, we have done combined worship. We call it mosaic worship because it is truly a mosaic. What we saw this morning is in many ways sort of like what we do there. You will hear multiple languages being spoken. You will get to hear different choirs and musicians bring their gifts out to hear different pastors from the various churches speak, offer testimonies. And so it really is a mosaic. We used to do those once every quarter. We're down to about two times a year, simply because the time and effort it takes to schedule those and to prepare for those is really quite daunting when you're trying to work around a lot of schedules for rehearsals, practice, thematic planning. And at the same time, what we heard from those congregations was the more we do these, one, they're being asked in some ways to give up their own particular worship services, and then their giving isn't being met. So when we meet, we still do it on a fifth Sunday when we do meet, and we found, especially from the Chinese church, that when we do it on a Sunday other than the fifth Sunday, giving for their ministries is down. So again, another practical thing to take into consideration when you, the host church, try to impose what you think is a helpful schedule when it's really not. And so it's taken a lot of time to get appropriate feedback from the churches that we partner with. I would say right now we're working to refocus our collaborative nature. The last few years have sort of been on autopilot for how we have maintained relationships with our partner churches. I'm not going to say it's good or bad. It's just the way it's been. We've had some times of transition and hasn't really been on the radar of our leaders. And so it's just sort of coasted along as that thing that's always been there. And so I know that a number of our folks in the Anglo congregation, as well as leaders in our ethnic churches, are curious and interested to see what more purpose we can bring to these partnerships. And so we are beginning to think through that as well. So, the pros of these sorts of partnerships. I want to go through these, and the cons, of course, too. Quite frankly, they expand our gospel reach. When you are working alongside people who can reach people that you are not well equipped to reach, who can preach the gospel, live out Christian lifestyles, and do all of those things, it truly expands you, the host churches, gospel reach by what you can do through those partnerships. And then what we found with a lot of ethnic and language churches, especially in our context near a university, is that when you mentor and disciple through these churches, folks who are going to be going back to their homeland, they are going back as disciples to make disciples. And with the wonderfulness of technology, social media, Skype, email communication, there are some of folks that I'm aware of that continue to disciple folks who have gone back home, and they can still maintain those relationships and that disciple making across the internet. So some very, very unique ways that you can go about that. And to think this can all just come through saying, you want a place to worship? Let's work together. The second thing is this. It equips and supports multiple congregations who would otherwise struggle to maintain a physical presence in our area. Okay, that's the nice sounding version of it. The real sounding version of it is this. You get to help folks who want to serve Jesus and share the gospel have a church who they couldn't afford to do it otherwise. I mentioned the African congregation. The same applies to most of the other congregations that I listed too. They are first and second generation immigrants who hold low-paying jobs. What money they get, they oftentimes send back home. So these are people groups that are not working with an extra amount of money to have a storefront in a strip mall or pay for their own building or that kind of thing. And so it is a pro for us to be able to see the gospel being lived out because we are making the space that we already have available to folks who don't have space of their own. It increases the use of our church campus for ministry throughout the week. I guarantee, unless you're a really super duper on fire church, that your facility is super quiet during the week. Am I right? It may be hustling and bustling on Sunday, but by noon, it remains dead for the next 6 days and 19 hours. And, you know, God has blessed our churches with so many resources that we don't think of, our facilities for one, and it's nice that they can be ready and there for us when we show up, but isn't it a greater thing when our blessings can continue to bless others and there is more life and ministry and living done in these facilities during the week? And so, you know, even when our folks aren't there, that facility that they give towards, that they have helped to build, is still having a gospel influence. So that's a wonderful thing. Having these relationships also provide helpful ties between our international ministry and our partner churches. For 41 years, our church has had an international ministry. Now, that ministry is separate and apart from these partner churches. And our bread and butter is ESL. And so we teach ESL to probably 70 to 80 people on Wednesday nights. And that's just, there's no Bible influence, there's no prayer, nothing like that. But the way we get them into that gospel door is we say, okay, if you come on Wednesday nights, we're going to teach you English straight up. And we're going to do the same thing on Sunday morning if you come during the Sunday school hour, but the Bible is going to be our lesson plan. So they're learning English through learning the Bible. And for some of them, they find ways to plug into our Anglo congregation by attending worship, but also by having those relationships with our partner churches. If you have someone from mainland China or from Iran or something like that who shows up, you know, you are eliminating all those extra steps to get them to a congregation who can minister to their needs by saying, you know, the Chinese meet at 11 o'clock. Let me walk you down there. Or here's our Iranian pastor. You know, he'll help you out. So it really helps us out with those ties between our ministry and our partner churches. So the cons of our partnerships. Yes.
Okay. Do they pay any rental fee or?
Yes, I'm going to get to that. Okay. Is it okay if I wait or you want me to?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So some of the cons of these partnerships, because it's, when you start on these things, you think it's great, it's wonderful, but you got to think through the cons and you got to share them with people when you encounter them after these things get started. So obviously, having these partnerships limits what we can do on our own campus and when. Now, I'll say this up front. This house is God's house, right? We don't own it. We're using it. It's a lease agreement from God, essentially. Most of your congregation doesn't view it like that. Hate to break it to you. So when it comes down to what you, the host church, want to do, you may have all these grand ideas for events, dinners, fellowship things, outreach, but you're going to be limited by what you can do and when there are multiple congregations or even just one other partner church who is using your space. Because the last thing you want to do, and I'll talk about this later, is basically be a really crude landlord and say, when we want to do something, you can't do anything. Doesn't matter what it is. That is the hallmark of an unhealthy relationship between a host church and a partner church. So it does limit what you can do and when. Lingering financial ties in an era when church budgets are shrinking, not growing. Some, but not all of our partnerships, when they were started and birthed out of our church, also included some financial obligations. And we've tried to pare those back during the years, and hopefully we can do that more here in the next couple of years. But there are still, for us, some lingering financial ties, and every church of every size has a budget crunch or things to be aware of, so I would still count that as a con for our partnerships. Varying schedules of partner churches don't allow for many crossover opportunities. Thanks, Eddie. So as I've said, the different times that the congregations meet, you can already see just on Sundays the difficult nature of trying to get everybody together at one time for anything. That's compounded during the week too, especially in the evenings, during the day, whatever. And so as often as you think you'd like to be able to get folks all together, the reality is these competing and varying schedules won't allow you to do that as much as you might like. So language and cultural barriers make it more difficult for building relationships across congregations. That should be a given, but it needs to be said. As much as you would want folks to naturally meet each other in the hallways or at combined worship services or whatever, for a lot of folks, Anglo in particular, when they see somebody that dresses differently from them, you know, speaks differently from them, there is a hesitation to try and engage with them, whether or not the person knows English or has broken English or anything like that. And so there are barriers that keep people, and vice versa too.
How's your Farsi?
Sure, right. But we have, you know, there are, quite frankly, there are some folks in our ethnic congregations who are fearful of white people. Our Hispanic church, La Roca in particular, the way that the immigration debate and the way that folks of Hispanic origin are being treated, they are fearful of being with us for combined worship because they don't know if you know, Jane Doe in the congregation supports them being there. They don't know if someone's going to learn their name and report it to ICE. And so we have all these issues at play that we're not always aware of that would prevent and give us hesitation for getting to know one another. Another given here too: facility management, safety, security, and cleanliness. We try our best after events to have facilities clean for Sunday or after Sunday, but there are times that slips through the cracks, and sometimes you can't always count on your partner churches to clean up in the manner that your host church would most like or even do the same. Same thing with safety, security. This door got left open. What congregation did it? Something's missing from the kitchen. Who was in there last? Well, there wasn't an event, but I know these folks have keys. A lot of issues and not always the ability to know exactly, to pinpoint the sources of problems in there too. So, how do we structure our partnerships? I see we've got 20 minutes left. We should be fine. At different times, these partnerships began different ways, but over the last couple of years, we have entered into formalized partnership agreements with our congregations. Now, I know this seems like the most, you know, backwards Baptist way of having a partnership with somebody, you know, on black and white paper and, you know, very formal language, but these things have been a lifesaver, and I cannot recommend them enough to you if you are entertaining having a partnership with another congregation, if you already have one, whatever, because we found that these partnership agreements, the formal documentation which spells out, one, what are the expectations of you, the host church? What are you equipped and prepared to offer the host, the partner church that you're talking with or who wants to come and minister on your church campus? The expectations of the partner church. These are the things we want you to do that you have to do, and here's what happens when you don't do those things. Financial fees, obligations, etc. So whatever you're expecting them to do in terms of paying you rent, paying fees for facility use at different times for special events, having their own insurance, 501c3 certification, all of those things, spelling it out, and then, of course, facility use guidelines. And that has been a lifesaver for us. And I got a few of these copies. I'll be happy to pass out at the end if you'd like one. I can email you a copy, too. They are between us and Example Baptist Church. Which, that would be a funny name for a Baptist church. We're the example, brother. Okay. Yes?
Have you ever worked with a nonprofit organization that's not necessarily a church?
We have entertained those over the years, but they never came to the point where it got formalized and they actually joined on. We are very close to securing office space within our church for the local Habitat for Humanity office, probably four and a half years ago, and that never came to fruition. We looked at a few other things since then, but trying to find office space near an entrance or exit door while also having a preschool on site, there just proved to be a lot of complications to viewing office space or the use of a space that's not ministry related. And so we haven't ever put the scuttlebutt on those as a whole, but we have just found, both they and us have found those more difficult the closer we got to shaking hands on it. So we never have. Yes, sir.
Does the host church, do you limit scope or whatever of the space that you have? Or is the partner church limited where it can worship? And you have Sunday school?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have total use of that facility during that time?
They do not. Now, if there are parts of the church that are open, you know, especially kids and youth, if they're not being well supervised, they could find their place. We've had them on the roof one time. We have since taken care of some of those problems. But, you know, for the churches that have been operating for years, we already knew when they met in certain places and when they didn't. And so as we've added on new partnerships, the question isn't when do you want to worship? It's, okay, here's when every other church is worshiping. Where can you fit in all of this? And so we do our best to accommodate based on what's best for them, but we never do that to the detriment of congregations who are already there. And some of the spaces that they use, classrooms, we just give those to them outright to use so our folks aren't using their space during the week. And for the rooms they are using that we might use, this it's just sort of a neutral layout. So we just ask that they...
Worship, where do you... Mm-hmm. Are all of them using your main worship facility?
No. So the sanctuary is only used by us during our traditional worship service. But the rest of them, they may be... There are two groups that meet in the chapel, one at 11 o'clock on Sunday mornings, one at 3 o'clock that afternoon. We have our contemporary worship in the fellowship hall at 11 o'clock. And then our Hispanic church comes in about 1 o'clock for their worship. And then the Farsi group, they meet in the annex, which is in the back parking lot. So it's musical chairs on Sunday. It truly is.
What size is your welcoming committee and giving directions for where people go? I mean,
it's not as well fleshed out as we would hope it would be.
I don't see how it could ever be.
Yeah, and our folks aren't there after 12 o'clock normally on Sundays, and so we depend on the other churches to provide their own sorts of greeters and stuff for when we're not there. But that's a good question, though. So let me go back. So why the need for these sorts of partnership agreements? I've been at the church 6 years, and part of my duties and responsibilities with the council I work with is maintaining our denominational affiliations and then our partnerships with these churches. And what we found that is that up until recently, we had no formal agreements between ourselves and our partner churches. Now, there may have been things written down in church conference notes from 30 years prior or some very basic outlined agreements, but truthfully, we were operating on assumptions. And you should never, ever, ever operate on assumptions in relationships with people or especially between churches. That is a bad, bad idea. Yeah. And, you know, I just put these last two things because it's the truth. Where there is no clear understanding, confusion reigns, and confusion limits what the church can do, whereas structure and transparency provide possibilities.
Do y'all collectively meet in leadership of all churches meet collectively?
Not at present. The different leaders meet a couple of times a year to plan out the combined worship services we have, and then I might meet with folks on a consistent or as-needed basis with the other leaders of the church. Again, that to me is not ideal, but that's just where we're at right now.
Who meets if there's a disagreement?
So myself and the council that I help work with, We would meet with them if there's a disagreement on a large scale. You know, if there's an issue with cleanliness or worship things or something like that, we resource those out to the people most involved in those from our end.
So explain this council. Who's on that council?
So there are two to three other individuals who serve in this council, and we oversee missions, emphases, outreach opportunities, some of the missions money spending that we have during the year.
Not just this.
Oh, no, not just this. No. Yeah. So, this is what we learned through formalizing our partnerships. One, it's okay to ask for and demand money, a monthly fee from your partner churches. The good Lord didn't put you where you are so that you could go broke doing what you're called to do. That to me is not a sin to ask for money from these partner churches, because just as you're pouring into them, they need to, right off the bat, also pour into you to as a reciprocation of what you're doing and to help cover the fees. Because you could say, well, it's not costing us anything to let them in the chapel when there's no one there. Lights, air conditioning, insurance cost, things of that nature. And truthfully, what we ask for right now is laughable for a congregation of 75 to 100 people who might meet. You know, right now we're asking several of those congregations for $750 a month, which is still far, 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 far below what they would have to pay if they are renting space in a strip mall or elsewhere. And so the money we ask, you know, is important. You should give it to us, but we don't ask exuberant amounts of money. We're not trying to profit off of their backs necessarily. We're trying to cover the cost we have. And if you're starting a partnership from scratch, having that be something that is foundational at the very beginning, it's easier to set that as a rhythm at the start than to go back a year or two, three later and be like, hey, listen, we really need y'all to start kicking in. Luckily, we didn't have any real pushback when we started this a few years ago with churches who hadn't been paying anything. I remember one of them saying, oh, we've been thinking about starting to give back. And I was like, yeah, you're starting to, but you weren't. So sometimes it can be motivation too. And with some different ethnic and language churches, they may come from cultures where even as Christians there, tithing is not a practice for them. And so it may be difficult to get them going with that, but sometimes requiring this fee can be a stimulus to help them start realizing why it's important. So, and we don't always want these churches to be dependent on us. We want them, hopefully, if the time comes and they move out of our space, to be already at a place where they are financially secure enough so that they can pay for things like utilities, space, and elsewhere. So getting them used to that. We learned of the importance of living up to our end of the deal. Again, when we're operating without formal agreements, it's easy for us as a host church to say, well, they want this, but we're not going to give it to them. Well, they want this event here where we can't, you know, we're not going to go out of the way for them because we got this going on too. When you actually have expectations spelled out, you actually have to start living up to them and doing the things that you are required to do. That is a healthy relationship. Knowing what they are tasked to do as the partner church, and you being tasked in remembering and living up to what you are supposed to do as well. So where those expectations aren't clear, you can say yay or nay to just about anything. But where they're clear, you got to live by it, and that's a very healthy thing. We learned about the relief which comes from helping shore up the safety and sustainability of our partner churches. So we actually went through the process with helping them get their own individual nonprofit status, their own tax ID number. This is insane to say, but we at one point recently were handling some of their finances too. That's a big no-no. My gosh, don't ever, ever do that. So now that they're handling their own financial management, thank God, and then their own insurance. Brotherhood Mutual is a wonderful partner with us, probably in many of your churches too. And they were very quick to come and help our churches find very equitable rates and coverage for their activities and their ministries as well. Child protection policies. You need to do some work on that in your own churches if you haven't done it already. And then making sure that either you as the host church are insulated from whatever your partner churches may be doing or not doing with their child protection policies. But either way, they need those in their church. So it helps us rest easier at night knowing that our partner churches are set up for better success because they have attained some of these things that they otherwise wouldn't have attained on their own.
Does anybody from your congregation, traditional or temporary, go to any of those services?
Not consistently. That is one of the things I'll talk about in a second. But that is one of the ways that we try to encourage our folks to get to know those congregations better. So instead of expecting them to come to us when we do our stuff or combine worship services, a healthier model is they should come to us and we should go to them. So there's not a whole lot of crossover with that, unfortunately. So some recommendations for these partnerships with your church. Set expectations. Set them right at the front and live by them. There's not much more I have to say about that. Second, know what you're willing to give up as a church and be okay with it. For instance, when we brought over Iglesia Batista La Roca, we decided that they would be using the fellowship hall for their worship services at 1 o'clock. We had to give up the ability to just willy-nilly plan a lunch or let a group use the fellowship hall just because they wanted to. Right now, we try our very best to only displace them 4 times a year when we have church conference. And the rest of those times, we really try and limit any disruptions to the fellowship hall. So there are going to be things you're going to be giving up, whether you realize it or not, at the outset. So know what you're giving up, run through all the different scenarios, and be okay with it. Don't hold a grudge against something that you're signing on to do yourself. No one's holding a gun to your head to make these partnerships possible. Have a way out. So one of the things we didn't have without these agreements was any formalized process for saying, okay, if we as the host church decide that this isn't a good fit for us anymore, how do we get out of that? And a lot of times you may be stuck, or churches may be stuck, with an unhealthy church partnership that they are unwilling to get out of because there's nothing they've signed on to. There's no procedure for getting out of it. And it's going to be messy and they don't want to do it. We've written in there what that looks like. And the same process for us backing out and having them leave is the same process that they can instigate on their own to leave themselves. So we try and make that as equitable as possible. And you may be in the position where you see yourself as a sort of a planter and releaser church. So if your idea is to say, we want to give this church 5 years to get off the ground and to move on to the next phase of their ministry, build that in. Let them know up front that you're only going to be hosting them for 5 years. Be up front with them and hold to it as well.
So you can extend it after 5 years if you want to, but at least you have a...
Yeah, so if you get to the beginning of year 4 and you're like, you know what, they need either more time or we like them being here, you can go back in and adjust it. But at the outset, let people know what's up with that. And if possible, don't offer financial support. There may be times and opportunities as a church is coming to you to provide some financial assistance with moving or purchasing of equipment, sound stuff, whatever. If they can do that without your assistance, even better. But do not, if possible, provide lingering financial support to these congregations. You opening up your space at a discounted rate is blessing enough. If they were to, add up all the potential savings they get from being there, that generosity itself is enough to blow anybody away. So if possible, don't offer financial support.
Is it your goal or your desire to see these churches eventually grow and leave, or are you just providing the space?
Right now, our policy would say that we are just providing the space. Potentially over time, when we readjust how we view these relationships, we may put some of those stipulations or sunset provisions in to say, in so many years, we want you to be at a place where you can move on so that we can provide a similar blessing to another congregation who's just getting up and started. So right now, we're not operating at that, but we very well could be sooner rather than later. So things to avoid and watch out for in your churches, and I've got about 5 minutes left. One, privilege. You as the host church will be dealing with privilege from the folks who built your church, who pay to keep the lights on, who think that it's theirs and not God's, and you will have folks who really have a hard time trying to give up anything they have to allow anybody else to come in and use your space. And God help you, because white privilege is a thing. If you're operating out of an Anglo congregation and you're having someone whose skin doesn't look like yours wanting to partner in, you will find out very quickly the folks in your congregation for whom white privilege is a very, very real hurdle in their own lives. Casual racism is another thing. Now, if you ask me, this whole word is useless because it is what it is racism. Okay? You'll find, when you find issues in your church from having, you know, partnerships, or the toilet seat got left up, or this room was a little dirty, you'll easily have people come to you saying, you know, those people left it dirty again. Or them Mexicans, and we've had to deal with that a lot too, you know, all because it's Hispanic, they think Mexicans, and that's a completely derogatory term to apply to a whole group of people from a whole region of the world. That is another thing to watch out for in your churches. We're in the South. It's something we've got to deal with. It's something we're embedded with, and we just have to be aware of it.
Well, how do you handle it, though? You say to avoid, but this is something these people are bringing in. I mean, mm-hmm. It's part of their background.
Yeah.
They are.
I think it's so opportunity. How do you deal with? I think it's opportunity of your church when you have people that say, you know what, I parked here forever. Now I can't park here anymore. Or racism or casual racism comes up. It's an opportunity to say, look, we're a kingdom-minded church. And the reason that we exist is because we're all created in the image of God, regardless of the color of your skin or the culture that you came from. And most of this is not really a race problem, as it is a theological problem.
Yep.
We call it racism, and it's easy to brand everything racism, but it comes down to what's going on in your heart.
Yeah.
What do you really believe about God? Is everybody created in the image of God? Yeah. And if so, it's an opportunity to teach somebody who thinks just because you're from a different nation, you're lesser than them. We're all in that. I would hope that you said, look, we've opened up our church to all these people because we're all part of the kingdom of God, and we want to see it advanced in all the earth.
Yeah.
So, we want our people to grow theologically, so I can see this as a plus when these manifest themselves if handled properly.
Yeah. So I think, you know, what you had mentioned in the word avoid, maybe it's better said prepare for. Because, like you said, they're going to happen. And thinking as you've thought out loud, you know, educating the congregation as the partnership begins, and then finding those healthy ways to address it when someone brings those things up to you, it can be an opportunity.
I guess what I'm also asking then is, who's responsible, as our brother is saying, who's going to be that person to?
I think first pastor, and then everybody that's, you know, everybody that's spiritually mature do that for everybody.
Yeah, I mean,
because if you take, for instance, if you have a situation of racism, why couldn't you take that person who's spiritually mature, bring that person along that's struggling with they don't like the Farsi folks from Iran. They don't hate Muslims. They misunderstand who they are.
Yeah.
And partner those people up. Just take that, actually somebody from the Iranian church.
Yeah.
And have them do a project. Because if I know who you are, and I know who your wife is and your kids are, I'm less likely to be racist.
So
or have those prejudices.
Yeah. So I'm going to real quick go through there. My advice, find your stakeholders in the church who know this, embrace it, love it. And then two, another thing to watch out for, buyer's remorse. You can be immune to it. Well, it's just, I wish we could find a way out of this, or we just don't like this anymore. You have a lot of folks who wish for the days of was, not is. And that's, you can apply that to just about anything in Baptist life. But all that to say, some things to be mindful of. So how to build a meaningful relationship with a partner church. First, worship together regularly. Whatever sort of schedule and rhythm works best for you and your partners, find those times to worship. Even if it's a time other than Sunday morning, even if you're encouraging your folks as the host church to go to the other churches and worship in their context. That's a wonderful thing to do, but find time to worship God together. Get your youth and their youth together periodically. you know, second and third generation immigrants and cultural folks, they are more Americanized than you think, and your ministry to youth may be better suited to reach them than the partner church's youth ministry itself. So really do well to get those folks together. Also, cultural immersion experiences. Cooking, you know, go cook a Southern meal for your Chinese congregation. Have the Chinese congregation cook a Southern, you know, not a Southern meal, but that could be funny. Yeah, there we go. You know, go to different exhibits. You know, in the Raleigh area, we have the Lantern Festival. And so there are all sorts of things that the people in your area celebrate culturally that you can be a part of, and vice versa, too. So some final thoughts, and sorry again to be rushing through this, but in spite of everything, these partnerships are worth it. Trust me, as rough and tumble as it gets and crazy at times, they are worth it when you see lives being changed by the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Amen.
They expand your church's gospel reach, and they make better use of what you've been blessed with. Setting expectations and sticking to them makes these relationships much easier to manage and sustain. Thank you again for coming. Hope you enjoy the rest of the day.